Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
Today, I'm speaking with Carolyn Tate. This is our second interview on the podcast, but we're coming at it quite differently from the first interview. So Carolyn is a writer. She's an educator and speaker and the author of 6 books, including her latest, Brave Women Write, and her best-selling book, The Purpose Project. Carolyn is a pioneer of purpose in Australia, and her book has inspired countless individuals to pursue their purpose and make an impact. Brave Women Write is her most recent book, and it's a brilliant book. Even if you're not thinking about writing, but you have something in your mind that you want to change, I really recommend you pick up this book, and we will include a link in the show notes. It's a powerful call to action for women to harness the power of their words to get writing and create both personal and planetary change. As a river swimmer with a deep connection to nature, Carolyn's purpose is to write and share the stories that move us to remake the world. And I love that. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about women who write and women who want to write and how they're showing up with courage. So, Carolyn, welcome to the For Love and Money podcast.
Carolyn, thanks for having me here. It's quite strange, Carolyn and Carolyn.
Carolyn squared, right? So let's kick off with you. What inspired you to start writing in the first place?
Well, I was a banker for 20 years, and it was 2001, and everything got turned upside down in my life. I got divorced, I became a single mum, moved house, quit my corporate job and started my own business as a marketing consultant. And really that was the beginning of, I guess, my self-development personal growth journey, I think. And part of that journey was about reading a lot and also writing. And I was originally sort of writing marketing kind of newsletters, and I realized that I loved the act of writing, but not so much the subject I was writing about. And I made a commitment one day to just go and spend 4 days on a self-imposed sort of writer's retreat, and found this little cabin in the middle of nowhere on a tiny little lake, and decided that I would write my first book. So after 4 days, I wrote 30,000 words. It was a marketing book, but very much a marketing book with a twist about how we could make marketing a positive, purpose-driven experience. And after those 4 days of writing that first book, I was hooked. I just knew that writing was going to be my lot in life. And from then on, I just kept writing.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm just thinking about when I wrote my first book, and I started, someone else suggested it, and it was part of a program I was doing. And I remember thinking, oh yeah, I'll give it a go. I hadn't actually thought about it before. And as I started writing, and this was Path to Purpose, it was suddenly like, yeah, I fell in love with it. And I think I realized that the other ways I was trying to educate people on the topic of purpose, mm-hmm. I hadn't even considered writing a book about it. And it was suddenly like, mm-hmm. okay, this is where you can go deep, you know, yeah. And you can connect with the people who are really interested in what you have to offer. So Brave Women Write, I love that book. I picked it up. I was lying on my sofa, actually, and it was sitting on the side because I just received it. And I remember just starting to just look at it. Like, I didn't intend to read it right there and then. And I started reading it, and I just got into it straight away. And before I knew it, I think I was a third of the way through the book, having just meant to pick it up and have a quick little look at it. So I love the topic of the book. I love the way you write. But I want to get into this topic of Brave Women Write. Carolyn, you and I talked about this before, and we were talking about more and more women are showing up bravely as protagonists of change in their industries. You know, they see how things have been done. They see that things are not working. They see how things could be done better, and they're challenging it, and they're showing up, and they're writing. You know, that's their vehicle to create change, and that's why we decided to jump on and do an interview on this. So I guess the question that comes up for me is, well, first of all, why do we need to be protagonists?
Yeah, look, protagonist is a really beautiful word. I remember when we were talking about doing this interview, you came up with that word, and I thought, it's such an amazing word, because protagonist in a book is the leading character of a book, right? But it also means change maker. It means a movement maker. It means someone who stands up to the status quo. And I always come back to that Alice in Wonderland story, and there's a bit in that story in the end when Alice is there with the Queen of Hearts and the Cheshire Cat, and the Queen of Hearts orders the execution of the Cheshire Cat simply for irritating her. And Alice stands up and questions the Queen's authority and argues that the punishment doesn't fit the crime. And so she has the courage to speak out against that significantly oppressive moment. And I think Alice is a great example of what we can be. She had the courage to be imaginative, to question authority and convention, and to really approach the world with wonder and curiosity. And I just wonder how many of us can be. So she was such a girly character, right, if you think about the book. But she was really fierce, and that book is just like, I've got to read it again and watch the movie. But she encompasses all weird characters, but still she's questioning and wondering and standing up to authority. And I think she's the epitome of how we could be protagonists in our own workplaces, in our communities, and even in our families as well.
I love that. And yeah, what really jumps out to me when you share that story about Alice is curiosity. You know, curiosity is what led her on that adventure in the first place. But
she needs those antagonists, right? So the people in that story that are pushing her buttons, and so maybe for many women it's, what are the issues that are pushing our buttons? Who are the people that are pushing our buttons? Why are they pushing our buttons? And then that becomes kind of like our cause or a purpose or a thing that we can start writing about. What is it that we want to fix in our organization that is just not serving the majority and the minority, of course? So, you know, whether it's, you know, it could be just things as simple as, or not simple, but maybe improving the environmental footprint in your organization. It could be solving sexual harassment issues, gender inequality, bullying, you know, inadequate support for mental health and well-being. I think that women have the chance to see what's not working, either in their organization or their community or their industry or in the environment at large, and to use that as their fuel for writing and their fuel for making change. And so we have to be protagonists to make an impact in our world, whether it's our close world in terms of just our community or whether it's the bigger world in terms of our environment.
Love, 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 love that. And I guess it also comes down to, it's an opportunity for your voice to be heard. So I talk to lots of people, and within the work I do, most of my clients are women. Mm-hmm. And this isn't unique to me. Some might go, well, you're a woman, so that's not surprising. Yeah. I know Afdal Aziz, who's a global purpose consultant, he said the same thing to me. He said 90% of our clients are women. Mm-hmm. You know, women are leading and shaping this movement. And if it's not women, it's men who tend to be more comfortable with their feminine side, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have some more of those sort of feminine traits. And these are voices that need to be heard, because it is, you know, it is a perspective, I think, the female perspective that we've been so masculine dominated, haven't we, in the world we've shaped and carved out. And that balance is needed, isn't it? So we need more of these voices to be heard. And if you're not getting heard as much as you want to be, you know, in your workplace or in your industry or whatever it may be, writing can be a great way for you to start refining that voice and reaching people who actually want to hear from you.
I mean, writing, you know, everything starts with writing. Every speech you hear, everything, every play, every movie, everything, song, everything starts with writing. And I think writing is a great way to get clarity of thought. I think it's a bit like that Alice in the rabbit, down the rabbit hole as well, because once you start writing, you just fall down the rabbit hole and you can encounter all sorts of crazy characters. Writing will lead you often rather than you leading your writing. And I think it's an incredible portal for clarity of purpose. It's a great way to gain clarity of thought, to put your ideas down before you actually voice them. Sometimes we can shoot from the hip and voice what we feel too quickly. So I think writing is a great way for us to get clarity of thought, clarity of message, and it's where the seed of change starts. It starts through writing. So yeah, so whether you're writing a book, a short story, a poem, a song, whatever it is you are writing, you know, I've got a woman in my writer's circle who wants to write her life story just for her son. You know, she doesn't want to write it. She doesn't want to write it for the masses, but she wants to write it so she can leave a legacy, so her son will understand more about his mother and her life. So yeah, writing, I think, helps us find our purpose. And paradoxically, when we know our purpose, it informs our writing. So they go hand in hand.
It really does, doesn't it? And I want to address something that, so I'm thinking, like, this interview, there are a lot of people listening to this who are purpose-driven people, who are purpose curious, you know, who, but purpose has some value in their lives and they have a perspective on how it can be applied. But I think one of the things that stops most people from channeling their purpose through writing is imposter syndrome. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, how do you get over that? Because everybody has imposter syndrome, right? Most people, not everybody, most people.
Oh, look, just love it. Acknowledge it. I feel like an imposter every time I send out a blog, but maybe, you know, that keeps me humble or keeps me more thinking of the reader, thinking about what motivates them and what their pains are and where they're at in their life. So I think that imposter syndrome has a purpose and it can serve us to an extent. And then sometimes we have to get over ourselves. So I talk about two purposes for writing. The first is your personal purpose. What is it that you're dealing with? So when I wrote Brave Women Write, it was a way for me to deal with my grief at the end of a relationship. I didn't write about the grief per se, as you would have noticed, but I did feel the grief and use journaling for that. But I decided to turn that grief into positive message and to empower other women to also write their story. So writing for ourselves is always really important. But I think women do this well because we want to make things better in the world. And so we write for a universal purpose, which is beyond ourselves. And so when we can get over imposter syndrome by connecting to the impact that we want to make with our words. And so when I think about, well, if one woman reads Brave Women Write and does something in their lives that empowers them and that makes an impact, then that will be worth it. So I suspect the best way to get over imposter syndrome is to get over yourself and think about who you're serving, you know. So personal purpose for writing, but also connecting to your universal purpose, which is beyond yourself.
That's gold. And this idea of getting over yourself, I think when you got that double dose of personal purpose and universal purpose is so powerful. For me, talking from my own experience, it was that getting over myself. It was the thing that changed everything for me with, you know, public speaking, with writing a book, with doing this podcast. It was kind of like, you know, this idea of this isn't about you. You know, this is about something bigger than you. And the other thing that I've come to realize is, you know, one of the things with imposter syndrome that I think holds people back is, you know, what if someone doesn't like it? What if I get criticized? And I've actually come to the realization that if someone doesn't not like it, double negatives there, then I'm doing something wrong. I'm being too vanilla, because I feel like, you know, not everybody should like what you write.
Otherwise, what change are you making? You want antagonists. You want people who don't like what you write to challenge you.
That's the measure.
Because if everyone loves it, then it's kind of like, yeah, what is it making any impact? And I think that you're right, Carolyn. It's like what other people think is none of your business in many ways too. It's like whether someone loves it or doesn't love it. You know, it goes back to that Teddy Roosevelt quote and Brené Brown has made famous about being in the arena. I won't repeat the quote. Everyone should know it. Maybe you can put it in the show notes. But the courage to show up and write your story is you're in the arena. And I often think critics actually are critical because they're not in the arena. They're not actually out there fighting the good fight and making an impact. So it doesn't matter if your words read like a fifth grader's, and fifth graders can write really well, by the way, these days, especially with ChatGPT. But it doesn't matter how bad you think your words are. And I think that's also the barrier for people to getting started. We think we have to be really good at writing. We're not prepared to be a novice. I know I'm like this with painting. I will not pick up a paintbrush and paint because I think I'm just really, really bad at it. And I'm best to stick to writing because the more I write, the better I'll get, right? But we're not prepared to be a novice. And for some reason, we have kids. When we have a kid, we're a novice, aren't we? We've got no idea how to be a mother. Yet we do it anyway. And I think that being prepared to be a novice or being prepared to be an apprentice to writing is the most important thing to get over that first hurdle, so that barrier to even beginning the writing journey.
Yeah, and I want to go back to what you said earlier where you were talking about the value of, you know, writing will lead you to clarity of thought. Writing will lead you to clarity of message.
Mm-hmm.
If you start writing, not to publish a book, but if you start writing to get clarity, if you allow yourself the opportunity to go down the rabbit hole like Alice did, and I'm speaking from my own personal experience with my writing, you go deeper. You go deeper with writing than I did with anything else. You know, you can read other people's thoughts. You can talk to people about it, but when you literally give yourself permission to write and keep writing on a subject that is important to you, whether it's about yourself or whether it's about something else, it gives you permission to go down that rabbit hole and to explore and to go deeper, deeper, deeper. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think, you know, you can really find those deep, deep insights that definitely suddenly propel you forward.
Yes, and I also think that find a cause that you're so passionate about that you can't not write about it.
Yeah.
So interestingly, I find that a lot of the women I connect with are wanting to tell their grandmother's story. And I want to write, I'm writing one of my future works will be about my grandmother. It'll probably be a novel. That's another point. Just because you want to write doesn't mean to say that it has to be a non-fiction. fiction is the most liberating experience, because every seed of fiction book comes from that the writer's true life, right? So, you know, writing about giving your grandmother a voice.
Oh so, my God,
you
I
know,
love that.
I gave, you know, I grew up in a family where we were fed the male side of the story on both sides, the farmers, the settlers, you know, the professors and so on both sides of my family. I grew up on the men's stories, and the women's stories were largely obliterated or untold or not even explored. And I feel like my grandmother, my grandfather, one of my grandfathers too, was a very feminine kind of curious community driven kind of man. So I really love him. I write about him in my book. But on my paternal side, on my father's mother, I'm exploring her story. And that's a story I can't not tell. So I think going back to that point of find something that you absolutely have to write about. And when you find that thing, you have to write about it, whether it's a cause like to do with climate change or whether it's something about sharing your ancestor's story, that will be the fuel you'll need. You'll have that universal or that purpose that I was talking about. So find something you can't not write about to keep you fueled.
Love, love, love that. Love that.
And just on that point of the grandmother's story too, like one of the interesting things I talk about is finding an ancestral elder to help infuse your writing. So for me, it's my grandfather. I have a picture of him nearby often, and I sort of kind of look at this photo and say, give me some advice, grandfather, or papa, he was called. But also, like, every time you write, a little bit of your ancestry comes through your fingers. You know, like, I know your mother, Carolyn, and I don't know if you want to go there in this interview, but like, just writing her story would be the incredible fuel you could potentially tap into for future books. And I think, you know, this is a bit about the comfort zone, isn't it? Like, I've always stuck within my comfort zone and sort of written how-to books, marketing, purpose, how to write. But I need to write a novel, like, because that is going to get me so way out of my comfort zone, and it will be based on the true life of my grandmother. But it's kind of like finding the creative fuel to do something that is so cause-driven that you can't not write about it.
Yeah, look, when you talked about how did you say it? You said when you write, a part of your ancestry comes through.
Yeah,
that for me gave me absolute goosebumps. And you opened the door to my mother, who recently died. And you know, she was a good age. She was 93 years old, and she was over it. You know, she didn't want to be here anymore, but yeah, it's the story. So as we were organizing the funeral and I was writing the eulogy and, you know, reflecting on stories of her past, and not just the ones that I shared with her and that I could remember, but inviting others to share their stories and reflecting on her life, you just realize, and I'm going to make two connections here with something you talked about earlier. Our parents, our grandparents, the women on the women's side, not just women, there were other, you know, other people, but particularly women, their voices were not heard. And, you know, we know now they had as much to give as anybody else. And yet largely they were assigned a role in society, mm-hmm. and had to fit that role. And mm-hmm. yet, you know, we all know from stories we have from our parents and grandparents that, you know, in many ways they found ways to reach outside of those roles and do extraordinary things. And I think that's a beautiful thing for anybody to explore, whether you write a book or not, is to actually just go down that rabbit hole and and explore and find those stories and unearth them, even if it's just for yourself, right? That's step one. And then step two is, you know, well, what value do these stories have to others? Because if they have value to you, it's very likely they've got value to other people.
Yeah, and I think that the more of us that share women's stories, whether it's our mothers or our grandmothers or even a woman we might know whose story hasn't been told that's part of your community, they all add to the collective voice of women, because historically we've been fed a diet of men's stories. You just have to walk around cities and see statue after statue of male presidents and authorities and so on. And so women's stories have largely been obliterated and or untold. And so every time we write a women's story, we're adding to this sort of universal sort of collection of women's stories, to the collective. So when I write my grandmother's story, it will potentially connect you to your own grandmother's story. And so there's these invisible threads that get connected. And I have this dream of women sitting around kitchen tables. Oh, I'm going to get a bit emotional. Writing the women's stories that need to be written and talk, sharing those stories with each other, because it truly is stories that are going to remake our world. You know, and they're liberating, you know, like you can get stuck in story too. And one great thing about writing Brave Women Write was it released me from my grief, but it also relieved me from a relationship that wasn't of service to me. And it helped me ensure that I would not repeat the pattern of past relationships. And it has led me to finding the love of my life and moving to a farm. And, you know, that's a whole nother story. But the idea of writing our stories is that they actually add to the collective, but they also allow us to release ourselves from those stories so we don't remain stuck in them.
Yes, releasing ourselves from the stories that we don't want to get stuck in. It all connects back. I love that you open this with Alice in Wonderland and going down the rabbit hole. I love that, because that rabbit hole, oh God, there is so much value in going down the rabbit hole. I feel like, you know, the society we live in, we've got to do everything fast. We've got to juggle everything. There's so much to do. And so we skim the surface of so much. And yet the value in unpacking your experiences and your knowledge to find those little gems that are there just waiting to be discovered, that's the power of writing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square meter of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square meters by 2025.
I think too that sometimes we think we have to have done amazing things in our lives for our stories to be worth telling, that we have had to give up all our worldly goods and go and sit on a mountain in Tibet and you know, fall down the mountain and sort of survive and come out of it at the other end. Like, we've fed in the media and through celebrities this diet of, you know, stories, which is really about changing the world. But for me, it's the little stories that matter. And last week I went to see Kitty Flanagan, who's a wonderful, wonderful comedian. And her show was all about thin slices of life, observations of how humans behave. And she just did slice after slice of everyday life. They were her stories and the insights that were shared from that, with a really amazing wry sense of humor. I wish I even had one iota of her humor, just so amazingly insightful and beautiful and funny, and you just fell in love with her as a storyteller. And they weren't world changing, game changing, life threatening kind of stories. They were thin slices of life. And I feel like every single one of us has a thin slice of life. We don't have to write the whole pie of the story. We could just take a thin slice of the pie, a thin slice of the story.
That's so, so, so true. And comedians,
and write about that moment. It's not so much writing about your whole life.
Yes,
it's
about
that moment in your
comedians
life.
Comedians are brilliant at that, aren't they? Because they take those amazing little moments. And it's so interesting you talk about that. I'm doing a story skills workshop at the moment.
Yeah.
And because I just, you know, I think stories will change the world. I believe that 100%. Mm-hmm. You can tell people all the facts, you know, that are out there, but it's stories that inspire people. And I see it day after day. And an exercise that we've just been doing in the story skills workshop is, they've given us this sort of construct structure, but the brief was, take a small story, something, you know, that might have happened in a few minutes, not a big life story, but just something, a moment, and play with it using this construct. And so I picked something, I just picked a memory from years and years ago, before our daughter was born, when my husband and I went skiing in Queenstown. And I won't share the whole story here, but basically, he's a really good skier, and I'd only been a couple of times as an adult. So I'm just, you know, I can ski, I can do intermediate skiing, but I'm not confident like he is. And I ended up on, you know, a run that was way outside of my capability. But just this exercise of sharing this story, and I thought it was just a story that didn't have much meaning in life, but actually playing with the story, I suddenly discovered this such a deep insight that came out of it. And I would not have known had I not explored it. And it was just a moment, right? It was just a moment. And I don't even know why I picked that story. It was just a memory that came to me. And yeah, I think there are so many incredible learnings in those moments or thin slices of life that you talk about.
There are definitely so many insights. And I think it's very easy through life. We're just so busy and we rush from one thing to the next. And we often don't really take the time to sort of consider what we've learned from a particular experience like that. So another good little, I love that idea. I might use that in my writing circle, that idea. But another one I talk about is story boxing, which is going through all the photos of your life. Some of us still have a lot of print photos, which I do. So going through all the old boxes of your photos and pulling out the special ones and putting them all into sort of the special ones, particularly into a box, and just sort of taking the lucky dip approach and putting your hand in and pulling out a photo and then writing the story around what happened at that time. You can do the same with your iPhone, you know, flick through your photos and just pick one and write the story around that particular photo. Because I think there's a lot about practicing with writing. Like, it's not about sitting down at the keyboard and go, oh, right, I'm going to write a novel. And then you get to, you start writing chapter one and you just go, I can't do this. It's like, who am I to be writing a novel? It's about just starting to practice writing stories. Small stories, like you've done with your ski trip. Thinking of it in, like, you know, I think it was Martin Luther King that said, you don't need to see the whole staircase to take the first step. Bit of a cliched quote, but it's so true. You don't need to see the whole book to write the first story. and start in the middle. You don't have to start at the opening chapter. Just choose the most intriguing or interesting thing and write that. And that might become the start of a book, but it might just be somewhere within a book, or it might just end up being a short story or a blog or a... I think that thing of like, we want to go from zero to hero. Like, we want to, never having written a word in our life, we're going to write a best-selling novel. And that will kill us before we even get started. So, you know, my number one idea is just start by writing little stories about things that really matter to you, and then see where it takes you. So think about it as an adventure, just like Alice. I know we keep going back to Alice.
Yeah.
But she just fell down the rabbit hole, and then she had no way of getting out. So she was just on this adventure until she was able to emerge. I am so going to go to a used bookshop and get that book.
Me,
a secondhand
too.
Bookshop. Maybe we could do a whole podcast just on Alice.
On
Wonderland.
Alice the Wonderland. Absolutely.
So I think it's about, like having a lens of adventure as we start to write.
That's so
fun.
Cool. Yeah, make it fun. And there are two things that really helped me, advice I was given when I was writing. The first one was, don't polish your words. Just write shitty words. Just get your thoughts down to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, don't stop and go back and start polishing. Just get your thinking out the way you would speak it, you know, without flowery terms or anything like that. And I think speaking your voice is another good thing. And back to what you said about, you know, you can start in the middle. Someone gave me advice to, you know, write a sort of draft chapter sort of structure. And then every morning, so I wrote every day. I actually gave myself a commitment. It was meant to be 1,000 words a day, but it was no fail goal of 7,000 words a week, right? So if I missed a day, I had to make up for it. But every day that I wrote, I would look at the chapter structure and I would see where my energy went. And I'd be like, oh, I want to do that. And that was freeing, right? That's choose your own adventure. That was like, I don't have to follow this structure and rules. I go where my energy goes. And that was hugely helpful to me.
Fantastic. And that just reminds me of something that I wrote in the book, is that a routine is the direct path to creative liberation.
Yes.
So having a routine and routinely writing is actually part of, you know, is where your creative liberation comes from. So it's
I
not
love the way
come...
you use words.
Thank you. I you know, it's not going to come sitting necessarily in the middle of nature because you've made yourself, like, you just happen to be there and, oh, get out my journal and write. That works. But a routine, a writing routine, is really important to get the words out. And, you know, I love what you said about, you know, just getting the words out no matter how shitty they are. I talk about the idea that it's quantity over quality in the first draft. So many people get stuck on the first paragraph and they go over and over it until it, like, they think it's perfect, but it will never be perfect and it will guaranteed have to be rewritten. So yes, it's always quantity over quality when you first start.
Yeah, and I love books where you can hear an author's voice. Like you feel like they're speaking to you, like you're having a coffee with them.
Yeah.
I love those books the best, rather than something that sounds really smart and intellectual and, you know, that might have very, very clever words but just doesn't connect with me. So that voice is really important. We've talked about, you know, the practice of writing. We've talked about what writing does for you personally and how important it is. But how does storytelling create change? How does someone listening to this podcast who decides to, you know, who has a cause that is bigger than them, that they need to do something about, when they write, You know, how does that create change?
Yeah, well, I think that brave words lead to brave deeds, and brave deeds lead to brave words.
Yeah.
So as you write, I feel like often it kind of leads you to action. So just here's an example of that. Throughout last summer, not last summer, the summer, yeah, last summer, I had a sit spot in nature. And a sit spot is a place that you go to on a regular basis, the same place, and you sit for sort of 30 minutes. And my sit spot was at the confluence of Mary Creek and the Yarra or the Birrarung River in Melbourne. And every day I'd sit in that same spot on this seat, and I was able to watch four baby heron chicks go from being eggs to being born and to being fed by their mother and then flying out of the nest. And every time I would do that, I would come home and I would do an automatic writing exercise. And so I would write what I observed and could remember. And eventually that would lead to insights about nature and my connection to nature and its connection to writing. And before I knew it, that was informing some of the writing of Brave Women Write in the second and third draft. It ended up being incorporated. It led me to doing a nature-based leadership training course. And so that act of sitting in that sit spot has led to so many things and is now informing all of my writing. So I want to be able to write words that will remake the world for women, but also for Mother Earth. And so nature, connection, and environmental issues and things will become integral to the way I live my life, which I alluded to before. I'm moving to a farm, which is going to be a whole new life. But that act of writing and being in that sit spot is leading to, has led to life change, definitely led to life change, and wanting to make a greater impact with my words, but also with what I teach and also with what I practice, particularly on the farm as we're moving into a space of rewilding the farm and rehabilitating, you know, this piece of land that's been left to disintegrate a fair bit. So it's kind of like the words end up leading to braver deeds, and then the more you do brave deeds, the more braver your words become, and you know, they're just really, really connected to each other, deeds and words.
It's a circle, isn't it? It's a cycle. That's a great quote. Brave words lead to brave deeds, lead to more brave words, and there is so much truth in that, and I think it comes down to, when you write, you know, when you go deep, when you unpack, when you allow curiosity to guide you. So it's not just about writing what you know now, but it's about using that process to become more curious and to uncover layers, you know, of whatever it is, whether it's self-discovery or whether it's, you know, a greater cause. I think that's true of both. But that, when you get that deeper understanding, that propels you, but it also gives you confidence because you know you've done the work. You know, you know you've actually gone where most people don't go.
Yeah.
Where those that, you know, don't write don't go. Oh, others might do it through meditation or something like that, but you cannot. There is a legacy in writing. If you are going to put it down on paper that will be printed and published in the format of a book, I don't know why, but that's something different. It means you're making a bold statement. You can't afford to brush the surface.
No.
You have to go deeper. So if you say something, you know, you've got to be sure that that is what you mean to say and that is worth saying, and it forces you to go deeper and to do more research and to study more. And brave words lead to brave deeds, absolutely, because when you have that deeper understanding, it propels you forward And you want to share with others. And then, like you say, that cycle, I can see the cycle, right? And it leads you to the next stage.
Yeah, it does. And
next?
It's kind of like an accountability. So, you know, bizarrely enough, I'm running these weekly writing circles, and we're going through chapter by chapter. Each circle, we're doing a different task or activity associated to chapters in the book. And so as we're doing that, I have to reread my own book. Have you reread your own books, Carolyn?
I had to once. Yes, when someone wanted to interview me on my first one, it was like, oh my god, I need to go back and read that.
I know, you read it and I go, oh, did I really say that? And then really write that? And then it's also like, I said I'd do this. Am I doing this right now? Like, you know, like tomorrow we're going to be talking about routines and rituals around writing. And at the moment I don't have a routine and a ritual because I'm in transition, moving to the farm and moving house. And, you know, I don't really, and I haven't got a specific book that I'm writing. But when I am writing a book, I am totally in routine and ritual. So every time you reread what you've written, it's a kind of reinforcement of the lesson of like, okay, how do I return to that routine or ritual, and when will that happen, and what does that look like? So it's not vain to reread your own words. It's about reinforcing the lesson, because we, you know, there's that old saying, we teach what we most need to learn. And I think we write what we most need to learn as well. So, you know, I think rereading our own work is actually very powerful, because it reinforces in us what we want to be held accountable to, but it also reinforces for us what we want to share and teach as part of our profession or our work as well. So, yes.
So, right, knowing that one day you're going to have to read it back a long time later.
Or someone's going to quiz you on it and go, like, but usually people don't. You know, the funny thing about writing is that the people you love and the people, you know, I don't think he came to my book launch, but he definitely wouldn't have read my last book. Can't even get my partner to read it. So, I've really let go that my family should care about what I write. They only care that I'm happy and that I'm kind of living the life that I desire, that I'm being true to myself. So we've got to let go of the fact that our loved ones need to love what we write. And also when we let go, like when I wrote Unstuck in Provence, that was excruciating, because there was so much stuff in that, you know, was revealing about my son and our relationship. And I really wasn't sure whether I should publish it or not. It took me 3 years to publish it, but I eventually found the courage to publish it. And I handed the manuscript to my son and said, son, can you read this? There's a lot of it in there about you. And I was really, you know, heart in mouth, thinking he's going to hate it, he's not going to want me to publish it, blah, blah, blah. And he came back and he tossed the manuscript on the bed and said, Mum, it's brilliant. You know, you can't say things like OMG. Only kids use those words. So he crossed out some really banal stuff. But there was some really deep and intimate revelations about our relationship and our experience when we were in France. And he couldn't have cared less what I'd published, you know, because it's not in his world. You know, none of his friends are ever going to read it. So it really didn't bother him. So I think that letting go of what other people think, particularly our loved ones, is really, really important, because they can hold us back. But if we think that they don't really care, they care about us as humans, but they may not necessarily worry too much about what we've written. So, yeah, letting go of what our loved ones think is really a big part of getting over the hurdle.
That's important, and linked to that, I mean, a theme that was running through what you were talking about is personal stories. I mean, Unstuck in Provence was a personal story, but putting personal stories into a book that might not be a personal book, right? That might be about that greater cause. And that's something, when I wrote my book For Love and Money, it was like, how do you write a book about, you know, this idea of love in business without getting personal? But it's scary, okay? And the introduction, the preface to my book, I share a love story. It's a personal story. And I was really unsure because I was trying to make the connection about what love inspires you to do. It inspires you to do crazy things. And I did something pretty crazy, right? And so I share that story as the preface. And I know some people will read it and will go, whoa, what the hell is this doing in a business book? They're not my people. And that's fine. But the other day I got a beautiful email from someone who had my book, and she took a photograph, and she's on a business trip in Germany and Switzerland. And she was sitting on the train reading my book. And she said, I just had to write to you. I read the foreword, and it's the most amazing preface. I read the preface, and it's the most amazing preface I've read in a book. And she said, what happened? And she wanted to know. And she said, you know, a really great way to frame love in business. And it's like, that's it. It's just you want to connect with the people that, you know, who share that same passion for the cause that you're writing about. And that's what matters, not what other people think, whether it's your family or anybody else. So I want to wrap up. I've really enjoyed this chat with you, Carolyn. And I know we could go on, but I want to finish up with this question. Why do we need to be protagonists, women? Why do women, you know, we've talked about women showing up bravely as protagonists of change, you know, in their industry, in their families, and how they use stories to ignite action. Why do we need to?
There's a wonderful documentary on David Attenborough's life, which I watched some time ago now, and the overwhelming theme that came out of it was that when women are equal to men, we will solve the healing of our planet and the environment and our climate change problems. And that's a really big universal reason to write, but there's an inextricable link between women and Mother Earth. And that's the reason women need to write, is for planetary change and personal change. And even in a small way, it doesn't have to be that you're going to, you know, change the world in a major way, but it's changing a part of our world, because the state of the world kind of starts in our own street or community. And so who we are and how we are behaving in our families, in our communities, in our organizations, in our industries, is where change happens. So that is the reason to write. It's to write for something way, way bigger that we will never probably understand. And the book that I would encourage people to read is Active Hope by Joanna Macy. And it's a book on grief. And I think so many women, whether we acknowledge it or not, are experiencing and will continue to experience immense grief at what's happening to the world. You just look at the situations of the extinction of koalas, our most loved animal in Australia. These are facts. We know that our world is under siege. And by connecting to our deeper grief, which is bigger than our own personal experiences, we can start to find hope and write about what it is we want to change. And active hope is about sort of acknowledging what we want to change in the world and then taking local action to generate hope. So I know it's a big kind of like big way to finish, but I kind of feel like that's the calling for women, is to connect to a universal problem and find a local way to make a change, and devote our words and our writing and our lives and our work to making that local change that's going to impact universally.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you. And I think that's a perfect way to end. Carolyn, thank you so much for coming on the show again. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm sure our listeners will, not just the women, but the men as well. And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
They can just visit my website, carolyntate.co, and I'm sure you'll put a link.
We'll put a link in the show notes, and we'll put a link to your book as well, Brave Women Write. It's a beautiful read, and I highly recommend it. So, get your hands on it as soon as you can. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thanks, Carolyn. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?